problem with my husband saying no to sex.
Well, that's funny because I never had a problem with your husband.
We are here to pay tribute to
laughing.
This is real.
Groundbreaking,
cutting edge,
and paved the way for shows like SNL and The Living Color.
Funny.
You bet your sweet.
Oh my gosh, I have no idea how to feel about this. Start the show so we can talk about it.
Suck it to me, cord killers. Welcome to the show about watching the stuff you love, when you want, where you want, however you want. I'm Tom Merritt.
Hey man, I'm Brian Brushwood, and if you ain't heard of it, Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In was a thing back in the day, and it was well appreciated at the time, which is, to be honest, when I heard about them doing this tribute to it, I thought, oh great, they'll, you know, try to recreate the vibe of it, but it looked like an awful lot of navel-gazing in there.
It looked like an award show.
Yeah, right? Brian Ibbett of Coverville fame, what say you about this?
I was also, I'm not old enough to have seen the original episodes and fully appreciate them as a very small child. But I've gone back and watched them. Rowan Martin, Goldie Hawn, Lily Tomlin, Joanne Worley, all that stuff.
Richard Nixon.
Richard Nixon, Saka Tommy. So yeah, when I heard about this, I was actually really excited, kind of along the same thing. And then seeing this clip, it looks like the thing they do in the middle of the Golden Globes to pay tribute to something.
Yeah.
Lifetime Achievement Award.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like the more time you're explaining to me what was great about a thing, the less excited about that thing I am. And it's like, would you knock it off?
Right.
Show me excellent clips, which I bet they do. Show me excellent clips. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, it's cool to see that again. Show me interviews with people talking about, like, this is what it was like. But don't show me a bunch of people standing. I don't know, man.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Standing on stage saying, was a laughing great? Didn't we love laughing?
And that was the beginning of the trailer for the special. They show more clips and sketches in the clip.
For the record, it is now Cord Killer's canon that nobody does worse trailers for their stuff than Netflix, right? Like they have a supernatural next level ability to take good content and make it look bad.
Yeah.
Comedy has always been political. And in political times, laughing was one of comedy's most politically strong ways of expressing comic politicalism.
Sad movies are nature's onions.
They make us cry. They make us laugh. They taste good in soup. I don't know where we're going with this, so let's go to the primary target then.
Roger that.
Got another collection of stories that seem to possibly indicate a trend. I'm going to present these to you guys and you tell me what you think. First of all, NBC, the upfronts are going up. So all the big networks are coming out and trying to convince advertisers to buy ads for the coming year. They're announcing their new shows for the coming seasons. Renewals, we'll have a bunch of that stuff. But NBC, among its upfront announcements, said that its most loved TV shows will be coming home, mentioning Pam and Jim specifically. They're from The Office, if you don't know who Pam and Jim are. Of course, NBC launching a streaming service next year. Linda Yaccarino, NBC's chairman of advertising and client partnerships, said, "We're going to have our own ad-supported platform. While other companies are pushing advertisers out," or are they? I don't think they're doing. "While other companies are pushing advertisers out, we're bringing them in. It will have a slate of originals and a gigantic library of all the favorites. The shows that people love the most and stream the most are coming home at a price that every person can afford free." Now, coincidentally, doesn't have anything to do with this. NBC News had a nice interview with the founders of Pluto TV on May 9th, talking about their approach to giving people things for free that they can lean back and watch. Pluto co-founder Tom Ryan said they want to be programmed to, and in a world of infinite choice, making things easier for people is a really valuable thing to do. Fubo TV, which started as a very sports-oriented platform, but it's expanded to some lifestyle programming, said it's going to launch a free channel that will include live original programming. So they say this is just going to be a channel. It's not going to be a free service, but as part of your Fubo experience, whether you subscribe or not, you can watch this free channel. And there's a bunch of free services out there. Tubi, As Zumo, IMDb Free Dive, the Roku channel, if you have a Roku, Voodoo's Movies on Us. We've talked about that one a month. Sinclair has one called Stir, which I'm unfamiliar with. But it made me wonder if free is kind of the new answer to too many services. NBC saying we're going to have an ad-supported free version. Probably going to have a pay version where you get rid of the ads too, I would be my guess. But they're definitely hammering away at like this NBC service won't cost you more. You won't have to pay for a new service from us. Could it be the new trend, or could it be the solution to live programming? A lot of the news, all the major news networks have free news apps, CBS News, ABC News, even Fox News, although Fox also has a paid tier for theirs. They have some free stuff as well. What do y'all think?
Free feels to me like a tacit acknowledgement that you're too late and that the field got crowded and you understand that you can't demand premium prices now. And yes, the last one to the party was Disney Plus, and they came in with just the right price and everybody has a full slate. So yeah, what you do is you make a new subcategory of free, which is a bit of a bummer because the only way to do free is with ads. And I don't know that people love ads. Ibbet, what do you say?
Yeah, no, I'm of the belief that if a service offers me for a few dollars more to get rid of ads, I'm the guy who pays the few dollars more to get rid of ads. So watching The Office as it was originally shown with ads has no enticement to me. It's going to be, catch as much of this on Netflix before it comes back home to NBC. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, basically they're saying we can't compete on the amount of programming that these other services have. So the only playing field that we can compete on is how much we charge for it. And if we're going to charge zero for it, we have to bring in ads. And I think that's going to be too intrusive for people. I think now, people like going to these streaming services like Hulu and Netflix.
Having said that, I do feel like, let me run counter to my own claim here.
That was my job, but go ahead.
but I do feel like what Pluto is attempting to do of essentially bringing you a free version of cable. Yes, there'll be ads on there or whatever. I think they're right. We've called it waterfall television on this program before. I think that there are some people that just like to have a thing on in the background, and when they feel like paying attention to it, they could pay attention to it, and when they don't have to. And the only way I see that happening is with ad support on there.
I think ads is one of those things where it's very, your response is very psychological. If you ask someone, do you like ads, they say no. If you ask someone, would you like an ad-free version or a version with ads that's cheaper, they'll say, you know what, I'll pay to get rid of the ads. But behaviorally, people resist ads much less than they say they do. And also, there's the counter pressure of people complaining that there are too many services. I don't want to pay for more services. So my guess is what NBC's trying to do here isn't so much what you were describing, Brian, of like, well, there's no room in here. Let's move in with free. Although I think you're onto something, right? Because it is a crowded marketplace and free differentiates you. I also think they're leaning into the frustration of I have too many things to pay for, which is, I guess, a different way of saying the same thing. And saying we'll offer you free. Like I said, I am certain that NBC will offer you a chance to get rid of the ads, and lots of people will do that just the way CBS All Access does. But CBS All Access has a version with ads that you pay for. Hulu has a version with ads that you pay for. NBC will differentiate by saying, you know what, we're going to take away the barrier to entry. You don't even have to sign up. Just watch our thing.
And it doesn't,
I guess,
make it
they'll probably make you sign up. They'll probably make you log in because they want to capture that data, but still you won't have to give them a credit card to watch.
But it does make it a no-brainer to add it to your apps, add it to your Apple TV or your Roku, whatever, because at some point there's going to be something that you can't watch anywhere else that is only on the NBC app with ads, and you're going to, you know, suck up and watch it with ads. But for the most part, if something's available in multiple places and I can pay to watch a version without ads on something else, I'll probably do that.
Let me throw a alternate metaphor here. When I go to, let's say, the local Mexican food place or a local sports bar or something, I actually deeply resent the Atmosphere TV, formerly The Chive, because there's never an ad and it's always demanding my full attention. That's what I feel Netflix is, an on-demand programming or whatever. And I don't go to these kind of establishments because I want to have my full attention directed to programming that, you know, has no audio to it. There's part of me that digs the fact that, yes, it's traditionally sports programming, but there's permission for me to tune out, look away. Ads and is a news thing happening? Okay, maybe I'll pay attention for a little bit and then dial out. It seems like maybe in a lean in culture, maybe the right move is to pitch leaning out, where it's just like, watch, don't watch, don't care. It's always on and it's free.
Yeah, and we've got a couple of different things going on, because that's what Pluto does, right? Where they're like, here, just pick a channel that has a name that you like: nature movies, sports things, newscasts, and then you can lean back and we'll program to you, and that's free. And I think there's room for that. I think there's also a barrier to entry play that Fubo and Roku and Vudu and Tubi are all getting into here, to say, we know you won't sign up for us because you're full up, right? Your Netflix and maybe your Disney Plus and your Hulu's, that's it. But you might watch us if we make it easy to get in. And then it gets to what Ibbot was saying of, well, and if you start to really like something we have, you might investigate how much it is to get rid of those ads. Tubi is a fine example of this. The show Powerless, which was about people living in a world with superheroes, but they just worked at a company, and like what it was like being just an average person on the ground. It ran for 10 episodes. They showed the 10 episodes on Hulu. Then it got canceled. But they had three more episodes that never aired, never went to Hulu. They showed up one day on Tubi, and I decided, like, well, why not? So I watched them. I think I maybe had one or two ads per episode because they weren't sold out, and it was fine. And I haven't gone back to Tubi since, so I'm not sure how well it worked, but I certainly never would have launched Tubi at all if I'd had to pay for it.
You may not remember the ads, but you do remember that it had ads, and that's something.
I feel like there's something here as far as the crowded marketplace. I also think this might be what solves live down the road, right? Like, maybe a bunch of these things go belly up, like you say, Brian, because people are resistant to ads, so they're like, you know what, I don't even want to try it. But maybe there is that Pluto lean back part of this that also comes in with live material that says, oh, if there's an award show, I'll watch it on this free version with ads. Mm. That's fine. I don't mind. Well, or if there's a live news thing happening, I'll go to the CBS News app because it's free and I can see what the breaking news is. Sports could work that way, but sports wants more money. And I'm not sure whether they can make enough money on ads to pay for that.
I'll tell you what, forgive me if we've already explored this on this program, but I think before we have talked about, maybe Bryce remembers, the phenomenon of, what was it, slow TV, like you know, a 10-hour train ride or whatever. It's like a Scandinavian thing where, like, for 10 hours the broadcast will just be doing a thing. Feel like there's an unmet niche of that kind of stuff. And full disclosure, I've been tinkering in that space a little bit myself, like on Periscope. I just tweeted out, hey, I'm going to throw sticks for my dog. I'm not going to talk at all. It'll be 40 minutes of no talking, just me throwing sticks for my dog. 17,000 people tuned in to watch that. So obviously they're not there for any kind of witty insight or narrative drama or anything like that. I think that there is a place for just something on in the background. And my guess is some folks, in the middle of coding, you want something else in the corner window going, but you don't want it to be something that that you feel like you're doing a disservice. Attention. Exactly. By not paying full attention to. So maybe that's what they're leaning into with this kind of stuff, especially with The Office. You know, we've all seen all The Office episodes, so you don't have to worry about, like, if you tune out for a second, you know, will they, won't they? I don't know. What season are we on?
That's definitely not what NBC's leaning into. NBC wants you to come for originals too. They're really going to be hammering, like, we're just as good as Disney Plus, Netflix, Hulu, and the rest, but we're free unless you want to pay us. I don't think they're going to be leaning into the lean back, although maybe they should more. because I think that's what Pluto's doing. Pluto, for sure, and Viacom, their owner, are saying, yeah, man, you want to watch Brian throwing sticks? We'll sign him up and put the rights and have a Brian throwing sticks channel. You know, I wouldn't be shocked for Pluto to do a slow TV channel, to be honest.
I'm just curious, out of how many of those 17,000 viewers on Periscope, how many of them were dogs?
I did, after the fact, just for grins, you know, Twitter has a bunch of fairly detailed analytics, and it's like you're able to click and find out, you know, the people who follow you, what their interests are. I did notice that the number one interest was dogs, and so I was like, okay, well, that explains why.
Hey, listen, folks, if you want us to have more dogs on this show, we can do it. We just need you to support us on Patreon.
Yeah, man, head on over to patreon.com/cordkillers. You guys are the ones that keep us loud, live, and independent, keeping us on the regular every single week here, just a dollar an episode. That's all we ask. If we met you at a I don't know, a bar or at a
Mexican restaurant?
Well, yeah, sure, a high-end restaurant. You'd buy us a drink, right? And say thank you for the last year of programming. We'd love to have it. Just click a button. You never have to worry about it. You're never going to notice. Yeah.
No hangover. Everybody wins. Patreon.com/cordkillers. Let's talk about how to watch. Disney had some announcements on its latest earnings call regarding programming. I'm not going to get into their actual earnings per share and all that stuff, but Avengers Endgame is coming to Disney Plus on December 11th. Remember, Disney Plus launches, I think, November 12th, so it's coming just about a month afterwards. In the next 8 years, Disney's planning to do 65 movies across Marvel Studios, Pixar, Lucasfilm, Disney Animation, Disney Originals, and, of course, Fox. 20th Century Fox, the Fox Studios, now part of Disney. Star Wars is going to take a break after Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker. There will not be a new Star Wars movie in theaters until 2022. They've got three untitled films on the schedule, though. December 16th, 2022, December 20th, 2024, so every 2 years, and December 18th, 2026. They didn't say if it's Rian Johnson or Benioff and Weiss or anything. Marvel has two films in 2020, then they're going back to three per year. And Avatar got pushed off a year, so Avatar 2 is coming in 2021. Then Avatar will go every 2 years in the off Star Wars years. Avatar 3, 2023. Avatar 4, 2025. New Kingsman coming in 2020. The New Mutants is now coming earlier than we thought. That'll be April 3rd, 2020. Also, Disney President Bob Iger confirmed preliminary discussions with Comcast for the rest of Hulu are underway. We've talked about that before on the show. And said that AT&T's sale of its stake came with specific terms regarding licensed content and channels for Hulu, and said that anything they do with Comcast would be the same regarding NBC content. So trying to assuage fears that Hulu's going to lose all of its partner content.
So I have mixed feelings. On the one hand, I am very aware that Disney has a fairly exemplary track record of taking on existing properties and becoming good stewards of them. However, I can't stop hearing rattling in the back of my mind Bryce saying, hey, one company to run everything. That's fun, I guess. Are you still wound tight on that, Bryce? Or
I mean, it's certainly not my original not original content. I'm sure I pulled it from someone else, but
from Disney. They wrote that.
Well, it's probably more likely. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's like Disney does have a good track record for now until.
Well, I mean, you know, are you worried that Disney isn't going to be good at all of these things, or are you worried that they're have too many things? Because those are kind of at cross purposes, right?
Yeah,
the worry about them having too many things is like nobody else will make any good movies because Disney has all the good properties. Mm-hmm. Or you're worried that Disney won't make good movies, in which case then that gives the other studios a chance to make really good movies that you could see. Because there are other studios, and oddly, I did not realize this till I read the Deadline story. Disney releases fewer movies per year, even with Fox added, than Universal or Viacom or the other studios, because I think they're just more sure bets.
I guess so. I'm not worried too much about the quality, because whatever they're going to make is what they're going to make. But I do think like them owning a lot of these huge brands and properties now, I think, is more where my reservation is, owning all of Marvel, owning the Star Wars stuff.
Okay,
now all
but
of
if your
Fox
reservation
stuff.
Isn't that they won't make them well, then what is the bad downside of your reservation?
I know my reservations in that regard is, you know, in a pre-Mickey Mouse Law era, the original Star Wars would have had its copyright expired and anybody could make their own version of Star Wars. But, you know, they're the ones who are spending just insane amount of monies to cause copyright to be the life of the creator plus 70 years. I suspect that that's not a great environment for creators of independent shows. Personally, I would love it if we could see Star Wars presented as Star Wars, as like a teen drama, you know, in a private academy or something. But we absolutely can't do that because of the situation we're in with the Mono Corp.
I mean, though, that's is that done. Because of Disney? I mean, first of all, the copyright thing happened before Disney owned Marvel or Star Wars.
Correct.
Right?
But Disney is the instigator of all of that.
Companies do this if they make a lot of money. That's a problem with companies having a lot of money and influence, not a problem with Disney owning Star Wars or Marvel. I think those are separate issues. Comcast certainly is a big enough company to have done the same thing, but they didn't have to because Disney already did it. So I'm sure I kind of feel like those are separate issues.
Sure. Well, I mean, we have Disney, who is, you know, a king crap of Turd Mountain, and they are the ones who change the rules for everybody. And I don't know. I am just cautious about that. Like, it occurs to me that we're probably not in a better storytelling world now that we have so much of that on lockdown for a mega corporation.
Yeah. Again, I feel like we're mixing things, though. Like, Disney owning a lot of intellectual property is not the same as Disney being big enough to have outsized influence. Disney's a smaller company.
I'm not saying the one caused the other. What I'm saying is all things being equal, the company that owns all the IPs, I would prefer to not also have been the company that broke, copyright.
That's not my specific issue. I'm more just concerned about all of the various properties kind of all sneaking back up to one central management. I don't think that there's any evidence of I don't know, manipulation or whatever invisible hand stuff, but it just seems weird. I don't know I don't have a specific issue, but I just
here's
think
the
it's,
other thing, which I'm trying to like, you know, come up with things that are like, aside from our emotions, right? Emotionally, it does feel like, oh man, they have everything now. But
and that's mostly
what do
they
have
saying.
From Fox that they didn't have 5 years ago when they bought Marvel, right? Like more Marvel stuff.
Yeah. Simpsons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the big concern you could have about this is that are they going to eventually get so much stuff that the things that people want to see, like the, you know, the big Simpsons fans out there, or things that aren't Marvel and Star Wars that maybe aren't getting the frequency of attention that Marvel and Star Wars are getting. I don't know what that is. The things I love are Marvel and Star Wars, and I'm seeing plenty of that. They're saying taking a break, but don't forget, we still have The Mandalorian. There's not going to be a lull by any stretch of Star Wars. We're going to still have plenty of Star Wars and Marvel with the TV series that are coming to Disney Plus as well. But I worry about the other things that they're getting as part of this. And I'm wondering what else. I'm trying to remember things that aren't The Simpsons or Marvel, Star Wars, that they're getting, that they own now, that they might just let fizzle out, that fans of those franchises might be like, great, you know, Disney gets their hands on this, and they focus so much attention on X that they just let these other things fade away.
Yeah, and keep in mind, I'm not trying to promote any conspiracy theory or anything like that. I'm certainly not saying the two things are unrelated. I'm just saying, like, all of a mega corporation who has a definite track record of trying to consolidate everything and make sure that as few different creators get to play with different intellectual properties as possible makes me uncomfortable. That's all I'm saying. And I'm not saying the one caused the other.
If the predominant conversation in Hollywood right now wasn't, oh my gosh, we're at the peak time for independent creators to be able to get money from Netflix and Amazon and all these other companies out there, I might be more worried about that. But really, it's just about these properties. And if they weren't with Disney, they'd be with somebody else. So then it goes back to like, okay, but are they going to be bad stewards of this? Well, we've already admitted, like, they do seem to be good stewards. In fact, they seem to have made way more out of the Marvel property than anybody did before Disney owned Marvel.
And
so
and that's part
of it. Doesn't seem like the worry is founded.
I agree. And this is that's part of my confusion about it, is I'm feeling two parts of my heart, you know, kind of conflicting, where it's like, well, on the one side, seems like I would never in a million years sign up to have Disney own all of the things. But on the other half, I've seen what an amazing job they've done when they've become stewards of these mega properties.
And granted, I'm not trying to say they don't own a lot of fandom's favorite properties, but they don't own everything, right? There's plenty of stuff being made that we enjoy that's not made by Disney right now.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, last night's Game of Thrones is very controversial, but AT&T up until yesterday owns Game of Thrones. I have a feeling Game of Thrones, you know, this is a recency bias. I have a feeling Game of Thrones is going to be appreciated as a great series, no matter what you thought of last night's episode, when there's only one more left.
Sure.
Stranger Things, Netflix. I mean, the list goes on. There's lots of things out there that aren't Disney owned.
Yes. And I would love even more of them.
Yeah. Well, and I don't think the prevailing winds are against that. It's just, we're waiting to see what they are.
Yeah. I feel like this is a bigger conversation than we have time for.
what I wanted to talk about is how you guys felt about Star Wars taking a break for 3 years, but I don't know if we have time.
I think it's great. I think it's a smart thing to do. I think part of what has always worked for the Star Wars universe is that absence made our hearts grow fonder. I think that we've gotten too much Star Wars lately. They tried to cram too much. And that's why what I think are good Star Wars movie. I liked Solo. I think it might have been the most fun Star Wars movie since Empire Strikes Back or Return of the Jedi. But it was lost in this hubbub of like, no, we expect epic amazement every single time on 20, you know, every 15 minutes. And it did a disservice to that when it was instead just supposed to be a fun rollicking romp for, you know, one bit of backstory in a otherwise expansive universe.
I'm hoping that these three dates that they've announced, I'm hoping that these aren't going to be standalone. Like, here's our Boba Fett prequel, or here's our Obi-Wan prequel. I'm hoping that we're starting a new trilogy, septology, nonology, whatever, you know, 3, 6, 9, however many they're going to be. But, and giving us 3 years to kind of get all the Skywalker off our hands and out of our minds, we get a chance to like start watching something new. But I do hope it is it's a story like the, you know, like the episodes have been, as opposed to the standalones.
And in the meantime, you're getting the Mandalorian.
Yes.
The Mandalorian. Yeah. Yeah. And a few other things. So
super optimistic. I'm very, very bullish on the Mandalorian, for the record.
Yep. All right. Let's talk about what to watch in Under Surveillance.
Not like you, it's all about location.
Under Surveillance.
Jimmy Kimmel's hosting a live presentation of recreations of All in the Family and the Jeffersons on Wednesday, May 22nd at 8 p.m. Eastern on ABC. Once again, we're seeing live as a way to boost interest in media. Woody Harrelson and Marissa Tomei will play Archie and Edith Bunker. Jamie Foxx is playing George Jefferson. Wanda Sykes as Louise Jefferson. Ellie Kemper will be Gloria Stivick. Will Ferrell plays Tom Willis. And Justina Machado is Florence Johnston.
I love this, and I think this is what I was hoping the laugh-in thing was going to be. You get together for a family reunion, and you recreate your favorite SNL bits, or you do a sketch about, you know, a well-loved family memory from 15 years ago. Like I'm so down for this, especially in a world where appointment viewing is harder and harder to manufacture. For it to not be sports, and for it to be something that, you know, in general, like, look, I wasn't crazy for any of these shows, but I have fond memories of them and I like the people who are doing them. It'll be great to tune in, to be there for the cultural moment of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see this as more akin to the stage stuff that they've been doing live Grease, live Rocky Horror Picture Show, Sound of Music, those things, than than anything else.
Also,
those have been hit or miss.
Is there any creator that is more deserving of praise and love than Norman Lear? I mean, this, you know, for everything he did, for how he changed television, great. I think it's awesome.
I mean, yeah. I don't want to see Norman Lear stand up on a stage with a mic and talk to me for 20 minutes about what it was like to be Norman Lear.
Yes!
I don't know. Maybe that'll be interesting. But this is a tribute to Norman Lear.
Agreed. Yeah.
And if it's not clear, they're doing a couple of episodes. They're not just doing like rewrites. They've actually picked two episodes. They're going to do those two episodes. I'm curious. I'm very curious how this all comes off. I'm also curious if Brian and Ibbot and I will get this live or if it'll be delayed.
Oh, right. Because of our place in the country.
Well, it'll be five for me and six for you. And usually with that kind of stuff, we get it on tape delay.
I wouldn't mean
although it's they're going to follow the SNL model or the live stage stuff model.
So
NBC, maybe they'll follow.
Question,
the live stage.
Is it out of the question that they would do this like as a sponsor with Twitter thing? Because we've seen Twitter casting about trying to be the source for video of in the moment stuff with the sports side.
I would wonder if it goes well, if that becomes some talks, right? I think NBC at this point, or I'm sorry, ABC at this point probably just wants to drive people to watch ABC.
Sure.
But if this turns out to be like, hey, that did pretty well. What if we did another one and brought in Twitter or Amazon, who's also doing live sports and stuff? That could be interesting. CBS All Access is going to stream its Twilight Zone episodes in black and white starting May 30th. I mean, you'll still be able to watch them in color if you want, but they're going to have black and white versions starting May 30th.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but I love this. I think I think aesthetic matters. I think that a big part of what works in my heart for the Twilight Zone is baked into the nostalgia of you know how I experienced it. And so if that's the case, then great, let's get as close to that as we can. I mean, to be honest, I wouldn't even mind dropping it to, you know, standard definition and throwing in some curvature on the side, make it look like a vacuum tube or some of that stuff. I'd be down for all of that.
Yeah, I'm probably not gonna watch the black and white versions. It's one thing to have your stories in black and white, but they're still going to contain the color elements the futuristic elements that go with color, like Adam Scott listening to an iPod and carrying around the camcorder and things like that that are relevant to modern times. And I think the break between black and white and that is just it's not going to work for me.
Yeah, well,
but that's why it's fun. It's like it's there if you think it's fun, and yeah, maybe you'll watch it once and realize like, not for me, or maybe you'll love it all. Who knows?
Or maybe they offer this, and I can also for Star Trek, I can actually turn the color off on my TV with a little slider button to watch Discovery in black and white if I want to as well.
That's true. You could also just launch a bunch of torrents and get the standard def version.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Somebody in the chat, Drew Nielsen, is saying like, hey, man, all you're doing is taking away information. We've already seen what happens when you increase the amount of information. You get that 60 frames per second soap opera looking effect on shows like The Hobbit. And it turns out that there is a sweet spot. And so if what you want to do is tell a mysterious, haunting story, maybe, 60 frames per second, full color, 1080p is not the best platform for it. And maybe the right spot is to give you just enough gaps that your brain has to engage and fill in the rest of the work.
Netflix's thriller called I Am Mother is about a robot raising a child in a bunker in a post-apocalyptic world when Hilary Swank's character breaks in saying she's injured and the robot has been lying to the child. That's coming June 7th.
This is on CBS All Access, you said, or
Netflix.
Never heard of it.
This trailer
Netflix
looks really good.
Thriller I Am Mother. That's why we're telling people about it now, because they probably haven't heard of it. They just released the trailer.
Awesome.
Yeah, sounds cool.
And The Rook, based on a book by Daniel O'Malley, tells the story of a woman who wakes up with no memory, surrounded by bodies. She finds out she's a member of a secret service for people with paranormal abilities. That one coming to Netflix June 30th.
Cool.
No. All right. How about HBO's Watchmen? There was a teaser trailer before Game of Thrones. They put it out online late last week. It's taking the Watchmen story and putting it after the comics and the movie, with Damon Lindelof running the show as part of the executive producer team. That one doesn't have a date yet, coming in autumn.
I am probably in the minority here, but I liked what I saw. And keep in mind, I'm a fan of the comic book. I generally liked the movie, and the idea from what little we saw in this preview, that almost an InfoWars-esque red pill, like, oh my God, we fetishize Rorschach and we've read his original manuscript, and you don't know, it's the world that's been pulled over your eyes, people, wake up. I think there could really be something to that.
Yeah, I'm excited about this as well. And we just actually watched the film for FilmSec, and was reminded how much I liked the comic book, and to some degree the film as well. But having this pick up right where that leaves off kind of opens this up. If it does well at being standalone, then this is something that, you know, my wife will watch with me, or my son will watch with me, having not read the comics, having very little memory of the book. And I kind of like that idea of giving us a new world that all this stuff can be built in.
Yeah, at this point, really, I'm only reacting to the visuals, and the visuals seem right. They seem good. They seem in character. I'm looking forward to it. And CW released a 20-second teaser for Batwoman coming to CW soon. They didn't give a date.
Where are you at on that, Ibbot?
I watch a few of the CW, the Berlantiverse shows. I watch Flash, Legends, and I've been watching Arrow, although I'm pretty much ready. I'm ready to give up before the show ends next year, just because it's gotten so repetitive. But I am looking for some fresh, Black Lightning. I'm looking forward to, I've got it in my queue, and I'll definitely check this out. I liked Ruby Rose's introduction in, what was it, in The Flash or Legends of Tomorrow earlier this season? It was in something earlier this season.
It's all the same, and you know it, sir.
It is all the same, yeah.
Renewals wise, FX has renewed What We Do in the Shadows for season 2, and Fox TV, which is the non-Disney Fox, the broadcast Fox, the one owned by the new Fox Corporation, that renewed The Orville for season 3.
I feel like both of these are permission for me to really dive in on each of those. Reactions were, among my friends, mixed but generally positive for The Orville. What We Do in the Shadows, everybody's been, positively effusive over. But knowing that there'll be more of that coming makes me feel pretty good about diving in.
Orville's one of the ones I just want to watch and I never find time. What about you, Ibbot?
We've been keeping up with it. This is one of those where we didn't wait and binge the whole series. We've been actually watching it week to week, and totally, it scratches the TNG itch for me, for sure. Mm-hmm. And it's so little McFarlane, Family Guy McFarlane, and so much more an homage to TNG that it's just got a lot of heart. We love it. And haven't started watching What We Do in the Shadows, but again, that's one that that we're going to binge the whole first season probably this summer.
Speaking of Star Trek, the Picard TV show is going to show up on Prime Video, Amazon internationally, within 24 hours of its premiere on CBS All Access and Space Channel in Canada. So here in the U.S. and Canada, that means nothing to us unless we're using a VPN. But if you're traveling or using a VPN, you can get access to Picard on Amazon, which is interesting because Discovery is available outside the U.S. and Canada on Netflix.
Man, I have a totally unrelated story to share. You know what's really fast, easy, and reliable is NordVPN.com/rogue. You can sign up and get
you're
3 years.
You're not supposed to do that till the line 59, Brian.
Oh, whoops. Sorry. Got it.
Am I the only one who's hoping that this thing is going to be called The Picard Show? I'm really hoping it's going to be called The Picard Show.
Well, it's just called Picard. I think that's the name, is Picard.
Oh, is it really? Have they come out and said that it's just going to be called Picard?
That, okay. But that's been my impression, yeah.
Oh, all right. Well, I'd much rather have The Picard Show. The Picard Show.
Be like a talk show.
Story.
Yeah.
Jean-Luc Picard.
And actually, retired Admiral Picard has a talk show now.
Jonathan Frakes is just laughing at all his jokes over there on the side.
Perfect. Yes.
Blackish creator Kenya Barris will star in a show that he is also bringing to Netflix alongside Rashida Jones. Black Excellence will be a family comedy supposedly similar in tone to Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah, love Rashida Jones. Love Kenya Barris. Love Curb Your Enthusiasm. So you're saying all the right things for me to be interested. Can't wait to see when that one has a trailer and a release date.
Am I the only one, by the way, who found out today that Rashida Jones is Peggy Lipton's daughter? From Twin Peaks, Peggy Lipton, who just passed away.
Yeah, I know that. Norma Jennings, Mod Squad, Peggy Lipton. I didn't know that either.
I knew Quincy Jones was her dad. I had no idea that Peggy Lipton was her mom. But now that you say it's like, oh, yeah, I totally see it. Okay, makes sense.
Oh, we miss you, Peggy Lipton.
Yes, for sure. I'm going to have a slice of pie tonight.
Mm-hmm. And a damn fine cup of coffee.
That's right.
Well, let's talk about what we've had our eyes on. Ibbet, what have you been watching?
I have been watching Dead to Me, a brand new series on Netflix with Christina Applegate and I can't believe I'm forgetting her name. She was Zelma in the Scooby-Doo movies. She was on ER for a while.
Linda somebody Cardellini? Will say her name and,
was it?
Linda Cardellini, possibly?
Linda Cardellini is exactly. Yes. Ding, 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 ding. This is something that Tina said, hey, let's watch this. We put it ahead of things like the newest season of Bosch and Cloak and Dagger, which we still want to see. But really been enjoying it. And it's got a very cool balance between comedy and very, very dark elements, which we really like. And so far, I mean, obviously, it depends on how they stick the landing, how they end the whole thing. But right now, really enjoying the kind of good girls, Breaking Bad kind of balance between some humor and some very, very dark things going on around that humor that it's got.
Excellent. I also saw you watching True Detective season 3. Brian and I watched that as well. What are you thinking?
Not as good as season 1, but boy, oh boy, is it better than season 2. And Brushwood disagrees.
Spoiler alert, season 3 is the best of all of them, bar none.
Really?
I'm not as firm in that opinion as Brian, but I'm leaning that way myself.
Really? I loved Mahershala Ali, and I right now Scoot McNairy can do no wrong for me. I'll watch Scoot McNairy in anything. I just hope he doesn't go the Sam Rockwell route and only play racists going forward. But he's excellent. Mahershala Ali was excellent. You may be able to prove an argument or give me an argument that proves that it's better than the Woody Harrelson McConaughey season.
I mean, I don't think I'm taking anything from you when I say it sticks the landing better than any. At the very least, the ending is better than any of the three.
I'll totally go along with that for sure.
Yep. Mr. Brushwood, what have you been watching, sir?
Watched a little movie called Detective Pikachu. It's Loved bad. It. It's bad, Tom. It's a bad movie. They had the opportunity to make a good movie, but they didn't because they made a Detective Pikachu. Now, I'm not one to want to take anything away from somebody who loves the Pikachu or the Pokemon universe. And if what you want is to watch a bunch of names of Pokemon be recited in a row and depicted with CG graphics, then that'd probably be pretty great. But I felt like they had a really opportunity to tell also at the same time an awesome hard-boiled film noir detective story. They did not do that. It's a bad movie.
It's Who Framed Roger Rabbit without the great story.
Let's not even sully the name of Who Framed Roger Rabbit by using them in the same sentence.
I have a counterpoint.
Yep.
I think this is an incredible kids movie that is punching above its class as a kids movie and just makes it not a great adult movie.
All right.
But Shazam did that, and Shazam was great. Shazam was awesome.
That is your Shazam.
Yeah. Well, I watched something that was neither a kid's movie nor punching above its weight. We binged What We Do in the Shadows and got caught up this weekend. It started with us saying, you know, we should watch What We Do in the Shadows. Yeah, put one on. And then the next thing we know, we were done. We had watched all 7. It is fabulous. My worry was, even if they do it well, will I like seeing essentially the same story with different actors? And you know what? I did. I absolutely enjoyed seeing essentially the same story with different actors because they do it in a different way. One of the characters also played the CEO in the It Crowd, So I was kind of happy to see him because he's fantastic. They have a psychic or an energy vampire. We talked about that before on the show. So well done. Just hilariously done, and provided that new aspect that you didn't get in the movie. And then there are, of course, the very famous episode 7 that came out just this week. It's the most recent episode. All kinds of guest appearances. I won't spoil it other than that, but every one of them's pretty great. And motivated and funny. Jemaine Clement is the executive producer of the show. Taika Waititi is also an executive producer, but Jemaine's kind of the showrunner. But Taika does a lot of directing. Jemaine does a lot of writing. So it has that sensibility, and it's really, really good.
Question of my three daughters, what age, which ones would be into it? 15, 11, and 6.
15 for sure.
Yeah, really?
I think so, yeah. Okay. Because it's got a little bit of that, like, proto-college humor to it. Basically, think of the movie, and anybody, any of your kids you thought would like the movie will like the TV show.
Right on. Did we talk on this show, maybe it was last week, about Taika Waititi possibly doing a Time Bandits TV show? Did we talk about that? I guess.
Yes, we
okay.
did.
Okay. Right. Yes. Neither here nor there. Very excited about that.
Okay. I was curious too. Where you're going with that. Nope. That's all right. Otherwise, Predators. We watch Predators because a coworker of my wife's said, if you watch Predators, I'll watch the first season of This Is Us.
Wait, the Predator or Predators?
No,
plural?
Predators.
The Troublemaker plural. Studios one from
2010. Okay. Yeah.
Predators. Predators was better than it deserved to be. I enjoyed it.
Mahershala Ali, very, very big in this movie. And by that, I mean, like, he's a bigger man than he is later in life. Like, I don't know if he was bulked up or that was for the role or what, but I'm like, wow, that's a taller, stouter Mahershala Ali than we see. He's kind of always muscly, but that was weird. First half movie, very good. Last half of the movie, I got bored and was reading other things.
Separate, real quick pitch. Guess what? Season 2 of Cupcake and Dino is out. Everybody should go see it.
They still general services?
I mean, only one way to find out, right?
Oh, I guess so. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Let's get on the lookout, Bryce.
Hey, we got a pic from Matt. Matt writes, my wife and I loved Pushing Daisies when it was new, and we were really depressed when it was canceled. Mikey from Film Joy reminded me how awesome this show was and let us know that it's free streaming on CW Seed. I can't recommend this show enough. Matt Bat. Thanks, Matt. I never got into Pushing Daisies. I know there was so much like outcry over it getting canceled after season 2 or something. If you don't know, this is a story about a pie maker who has a supernatural ability where he can touch someone who's dead and bring them back to life, but if he touches them again, then they die forever.
Classic tale.
Which is great for pie because he can buy spoiled food.
And he uses that to help solve murders also. It's a very,
I mean,
like...
Why else would you use it? Right. I mean, my goodness. I mean, go to the morgue and touch people once and then say goodbye and then walk to a different state? Why? No, I'd solve murders.
Yeah, well... Sure. I agree. It's maybe gilding the lily on that. Did any of you guys see Pushing Daisies?
I love Pushing Daisies. It's one of my favorite things of all time. They actually confront what your guys are talking about in the series. Mm. And he doesn't decide to go solve murders. It's that he gets pulled into by this detective friend who's like, you know what would be cool? I'm trying to solve this murder. Could you just, you know, maybe touch him and ask him who killed him? And then, so yeah, it's pretty amazing. Pretty great. Yeah.
So
Lee Pace is fantastic too.
Oh yeah. So there are two seasons of Pushing Daisies now on CW Seed, which I think is different than the free CW app. So make sure you're looking for CW Seed, C-S-E-E-D. But it's also on Amazon Prime Video. So check that out also, Pushing Daisies.
Yeah, Pie Man the Accuser, only on CW Seed. Hey, if you got something we should be on the lookout for, email us cordkillers@gmail.com. Hey, Brian, what was that VPN again?
NordVPN.com/rogue. You can get 3 years for $99. And if you sign up now, you'll even get an extra 1 month free. Hey, so we're getting ready to head into summertime, and that's when everybody gets out of high school, and that's when all of YouTube kind of sees a bumper crop of attention spans. It's a really exciting time. If you've not checked in lately with both YouTube.com/scamschool or YouTube.com/modernrogue, know that over the next few weeks, we're going to be putting our red letter best forward for you guys because we need the fans.
Well, it's not that okay. I'm making it sound bad.
Oh no! I mean, the shows are good.
Please watch the shows.
It's YouTube Christmas is what I'm trying to say. It's like we're moving into the sunshine days, which is really really good.
Excellent. Go check it out, folks. Let's move on to the front lines.
Front lines.
Roku reported it lost 9 cents a share in Q1 on revenue of $207 million. That's up 51% on the year, so better. It's not like they lost 51% more. They lost less. Analysts had expected revenue of $190 million and a loss of 24 cents a share. So Roku doing really well is basically what that means. Advertising platform revenue grew 79% on the year. That's where they're betting their future is selling ads through their platform, while sales of set-top boxes grew at a more modest 18%. Still an important part of their business, but not the growth market for them anymore. Active users grew 2 million in the quarter to 29.1 million, and the company estimates that a third of all smart TVs sold in the United States in Q1 ran the Roku OS, which would make it the top smart TV operating system in the country for the first time.
So this is a tremendous amount of dark bandwidth of attention that they have figured out how to monetize in terms of direct advertisements on there. How long, Ibit and Merritt, do you think we are from them going a step beyond not just doing discursive ads, but also like selling placement, like, hey, whatever your thing is, how would you like it to be, you know, slightly bigger than everything else so that everybody ends up looking at it? And that, by the way, that's assuming they're not already secretly doing that without us knowing.
Well, I haven't noticed it if they are, but I feel like that risks a backlash and nobody wants a backlash. To be like, oh, your channel will show up bigger than the other channels. I think that would cause a bunch of people to give them grief.
But counterexample, like once you hit a certain level of dominance, for example, let's take Netflix. Universally, everybody hates the autoplay trailers that Netflix are doing. But obviously, they work to some next degree level. And that the downside is nothing compared to the upside. So how long until Roku is able to just, you know, goose them numbers?
I don't know, man. My gut reaction is that people complain, again, like advertising, people complain about the Netflix trailers out of proportion to the number of people who are really bothered by them. But if suddenly, like, your icons are bigger, I feel like they get a bigger backlash. That's just a gut feeling, though. I could be wrong.
Ibit, what say you?
See, here's the thing. I do. We use Apple TV for everything. So I'm guessing Roku inserts ads between shows as you're getting ready for the next thing to watch. Is that where the advertising revenue is coming from?
Advertising revenue is coming from the Roku channel, but also there's banner ads sometimes on the page when you're looking through your apps.
Gotcha.
And there's some ads in other places in the interface.
Also, when you're sort of in screensaver mode, they've got a cityscape that has you know, well placed.
You'll get ads along with them as well. Okay. So yeah, I mean, that is the path that usually see these things go, right? First you pay for ads, then they figure out that you can pay for bigger ad. People will pay more for a bigger ad than all the other ads. So it does seem like it's the next logical step.
But I thought maybe I misunderstood you, Brushwood. I thought you were saying like you're like Hulu pays to make the Hulu icon larger than the other icons in your interface.
I wouldn't be surprised. And this is.
I don't think they risk that.
Yeah. I'm just.
All of a sudden, you have UX designers mad at you, and man, you don't want that.
Right. Yeah. No. I'm feeling out the space, but I could see a case where you know, all of a sudden the most prominent thing happens to be they can act like it's a service where it's like everybody's talking about the new Captain Marvel 2 trailer, so we did you the favor of making it the largest thing on the as soon as your Roku opened. But meanwhile, money.
I think there's a way for them to do what you're talking about without actually affecting the interface. And if that's the case, then absolutely they're going to do it.
Yeah. Netflix published its first most watched list in the UK Thursday. Our Planet topped the list, followed by The Perfect Date, The Highwaymen, Silence and Black Summer. Customers will start seeing this list on the service itself this week. The numbers are based on most watched individual seasons of a show. A watch is counted if the viewer finishes at least 50% of an episode. This is something that a lot of people sounded like they've wanted for a long time, but now that it sounds like we have it, I don't know how I feel about it. Is that weird?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's slightly interesting. I don't experience Netflix in the UK, so I can't, a lot of these I'm like, I don't know. Do I hear people talk about The Highwaymen? Not really, but maybe if I lived in Swindon, I would. So it's hard for me to judge. If we, our UK listeners out there can write in to cordkillers@gmail.com and let us know if this feels like the right amount. I'm always curious about a top 10 like the list.
Well, I maybe this means just a little bit more to me because when Hacking the System made it to Netflix, the only way for me to find out that it was doing well was at instantwatch.com, that they maintained their own set of top 10 lists on here. Might have been fun retroactively if you know, I could have been on an official Netflix list.
And these are really meant to help people understand the, like, what you were just saying about Roku actually doing, but through advertisements, which is like, hey, everybody's talking about Our Planet.
Yeah.
Everybody's watching it. Here it is. It's easy for you to get because it's in this list. NBC is shifting to a year-round programming schedule with one new drama and two new comedies, the only new shows premiering this autumn, while other new shows will roll in throughout the winter and spring. NBC execs say comedy is now the heart of the brand, although it kind of always has been. NBC says The Good Place is actually one of the most viewed series on our air, and that the average age of an SVU viewer is much closer to 43 than 57, their own research says. They say episode orders will be more fluid in the future as well. For instance, Brooklyn Nine-Nine just getting a 13-episode order rather than a traditional 22.
Some of that smacked of just being a little bit weirdly defensive. to my ears, like to,
I don't know
nowhere.
If it's offensive or if it's like legitimately like, look, we see Variety, Deadline, Hollywood Reporter, they're all saying SVU is for old people, but our research shows that it's not. And we're also adapting to the fact that people watch at different times. So we're not just going to put SVU on the same time every night because that's when the old people watch. We're going to try to put it where the 43-year-olds could watch. I don't know.
Meanwhile, an update to the Apple TV app for iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, and Samsung's 2019 Smart TV is out. This adds the new channels feature where you can subscribe and watch to certain TV providers' content without going to their app. That includes HBO, Starz, Showtime, Smithsonian Channel, Epix, and Tastemade with CBS All Access and MTV on the way, or MTV Hits on the way. Shows for channels can be downloaded for offline viewing. It also adds a kids section with family-friendly content and will make general recommendations upon using a combination of algorithms and human curation.
I apologize. I didn't get a chance to go in and change this. I forgot. MTV Hits is there. I noticed it because I updated this. And man, is this a disappointing update.
Oh, no.
There's a new icon. The squares are rounded now. And yes, if you scroll all the way to the bottom of the first page, you can see the channels and you can sign up for them now within the app. But really, it's the same app I had before the update in every other way. Maybe those recommendations are going to be better now. I'll have to use it for a couple of weeks to be able to tell.
Hold on. Am I hearing you correctly, Tom? Apple TV, it's going to be great.
I don't know if that applies because this was never about their originals. So
okay, all right.
You tell me if you still are part of it. Does this skate in on that? Because this was about channels.
Right, the delivery platform, not the programming.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, it's fine. This is a lovely TVOS update. That added the ability to make channels a slightly easier to subscribe to. There's nothing bad about it. I don't know.
Apple TV, there's nothing bad about it.
Exactly.
Put that on the poster.
Right. I mean, I'll be honest, if this hadn't been part of their big announcement a month ago, I'd be sitting here like, hey, there was an update to the Apple TV app and it's kind of cool. You can now, you know, subscribe to the channels inside, like some nifty cool things in there. Nice job, right? But because it was like part of the presentation, I feel like, oh, okay, Apple, sure.
It is really weird to watch Apple kind of lose its groove. And I can't point to any one thing, but just like over and over again, I'm like, okay, seems like you guys were a little more lockstep and precise before, but you do
well,
you.
Are they though? I don't know. I always question that kind of stuff, or whether it's just a psychological perception or whether there's reality behind it.
Either way, yeah.
Man. Netflix is lining up more content sources and now has a first look deal with Dark Horse for adaptations of comics into TV and movies. There's also a development deal for TV projects from Mexican director Manolo Caro, creator of comedy drama The House of Flowers, starting with Alguien Tiene Que Morir, Someone Has to Die. It's kind of a comedy, though. It's a three-part miniseries set in Spain in the 1950s. And finally, Netflix acquired Storybots, an Emmy Award-winning children's show producer known for Ask the Storybots, founded by the creators of Jib Jab.
I feel like I might have seen Ask the Storybots at some point. Yeah. Don't have any strong feelings one way or the other.
But it's Netflix getting into buying the creators like they did with Miller World. They're right. Buying somebody who makes shows, and we're going to keep seeing them do that so that they've got a nice army of stuff and deals. Like, they're not going to buy Dark Horse right now, maybe someday, but right now they're going to make a deal with them to see what they can bring into that pipeline.
And I guess back to our early conversation about the monocorporation buying up all the fully developed properties, I guess that's Netflix being Pepsi to the Disney's Coke, in that there it's like, no, we're going to do emerging properties, we're going to make it worthwhile to buy big collections all at once.
Yeah. Even though Netflix is a bigger company.
Netflix will bring back Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt for one time interactive special in 2020. Ellie Kemper, Titus Burgess, Jane Krakowski, and Carol Kane will return. So Bandersnatch, but comedy. Wait, they're going to make it like interactive? You're going to get to decide?
Interactive, yeah. Yes. Choices and all that, yeah.
That sounds fun.
Maybe, right? Yeah. Like, I don't know. It could make all the difference in how this works, because I don't know that I had too many problems with the way Bandersnatch worked. Depending on what my choices were, I enjoyed the stories more or less, and it was fun poking around to see what was in there. So in the end, I enjoyed the experience. I didn't necessarily feel like the story stood up on its own, but maybe it didn't have to. This story might hold up on its own, no matter how many times you go through.
And being comedy, they don't have to do all that setup. Being an established comedy, they don't have to do all that setup like they did for Bandersnatch. You already know about this world, and you'll get the curiosity viewers. But for the most part, the viewers are going to be people who are familiar with the previous stories.
I think I'll wait until they make a deal with Norman Lear to do an interactive.
What I'm curious about, though, is if they'll figure out how to make it so that I can watch interactive comedies with the Apple TV, for example, as opposed to having to watch it on my iPad and share it to the Apple TV. Yeah.
That's the API, though. I wonder if that's something that Apple has to change, or if Netflix just didn't want to put in the extra developer time to adapt. Well, it's time to hear what you have to say in Dispatches from the Front. Our first missive comes from Tim the Last. No more Tims after Tim Last. With Disney Plus implying that they will release their shows on a week-to-week basis, I thought this was a good time to discuss the topic of binge-watching again. Personally, I prefer the week-to-week episode release, as it gives my brain time to digest what has taken place. With that said, I just got through binge-watching the first four episodes of Season 8 of Game of Thrones. The entire story flows much better as a binge-watch as it does compared to being watched week-to-week. I recommend you guys do the same and see what you think.
Yeah, where are you at on binge versus week-over-week?
I prefer the binge, personally. I think that, for example, Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., at least the first couple seasons, far better as a binge than watching week to week, because those things needed the support of the previous episode to really, really tell a good story. So if I can, and it's even with new stuff, I will try to wait at least several weeks and watch four or five episodes at a time. But there's some week to week stuff. Like I can't stop doing Game of Thrones. I can't stop doing watching Barry week to week, Veep, that sort of thing. We've got to catch those day and date.
I think it depends on the show. There are some shows where I agree, like we talked about Westworld, the experience improves if you just binge it. Or that's true. And maybe that's true of Game of Thrones. But that said, and again, this is the worst week to bring up this sort of point, given all the controversy over the most recent episode. But Game of Thrones is much more fun as a team sport, right? As a, like, did y'all see the game last night? What'd you think? Let's talk about it. You know, that's a really fun aspect of it that you don't get with Stranger Things because it all dumps at once. And I think you would get that with Stranger Things if it was week to week. So there are times, and I don't know if you can even predict how this goes. There are times when it's more fun to do it week to week because of the ability to hang on the edge and talk to folks about it. And there are times when you don't need that. And in fact, this, like you say, with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the story isn't served as well if you have to wait between episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like in general, binging always is a net positive to the quality of experience that you get. The only time that that's not true is when you are caught up to real-time distribution. So if the question is, you know, does Disney want to create a cultural phenomenon? Because this was Justin Robert Young's point back in the day.
Right.
He said, this is dumb as hell that Netflix finally got Arrested Development and they're just going to dump it all at once. They could get 3 months of coverage of everybody talking about it, but instead they just dropped it all at the same time. Turns out he was wrong, and it did just fine the way it is. So I could see it going either way, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think there's a wrong or a right answer. I think it's case by case. Although I think more often than not, you're right that binging probably is the better way.
Klitsky writes in, Tom and Brian, I'm writing about your continued discussion on episode 266 of Netflix canceling a show after 3 seasons. I noticed that many of the original series, such as the Santa Clarita Diet, have only 10 episodes each season, where most broadcast TV series have 24 to 26 episodes. So a 3-season series on Netflix at 30 episodes is close to a single year on broadcast TV. So Netflix canceling a show after 3 seasons isn't much different than a broadcast TV canceling a show after just 1 season. Good point. We hadn't talked about the shortened length.
That's an interesting point. If I think about it though, I'm like, okay, but is it apples to apples? Because if you know, hey, we're getting this much money, and Netflix doesn't really care how many episodes we make, do we pour more money into fewer episodes and a concentrated, really tight story? Versus when this would have been on broadcast, they would have said, here's your money, stretch it over 22 episodes, and you got to have a story that covers 22 episodes. Like, I don't know, arguably the episode count makes for better stories, and it's about the funding anyway. So I get what Klitsky is saying, and it's absolutely a good point, but there may be reasons why a shorter season is actually better than a 22 episode season. I'm just trying to work that out.
Yeah, no, I think you get 3 seasons of 3 overarching stories with a 3 10-episode season set up than you do the 1 22-23 episode episode set up where it's 1 overarching story. So I say apples to oranges, but that's my point of view.
Yeah. I mean, you can't say that, like, well, the best book of all time is War and Peace because it's the longest.
Right.
Yes. I mean, it is the best book to keep your door from being opened by your
so
dog.
So good at that, right? Yeah.
The best book to throw it in.
Complete Works of Shakespeare, no slouch at keeping the door open.
That's called multimedia.
Nikki M. says, hi, Killers of Chords. In the era of remakes, what show would you like to reboot? I love this email. Thank you, Nikki M. Nikki says, I love mysteries. So Thin Man, Nick and Nora as a TV mystery series. Nick becomes a detective and joins AA. Now that Nora has come back into his life with preteen Nikki, who inherited his father's ability to find trouble. Charlie Chan mysteries. American Asian detective in San Francisco without the stereotypes of the age. Or Murder, She Wrote as anthology with clever locked room mysteries. What TV shows would you like rebooted from movies or TV?
Oh man, I got a good one. Are you ready?
Yeah.
The Monkees. In the 21st century, the Monkees are very aware that they are a prefabricated answer to the Beatles, and they have to, and they are aware that because this was not part of the story in the actual TV show. Like, they have to learn how to play guitar. They want to be taken seriously. They're dealing with social media. They're brilliant comedians, but then they have to. But what they deeply crave is the respect of the 12-year-olds who are screaming for them. That would be amazing.
So it'd be completely, obviously it'd be a completely new cast, but they would be the Monkees.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. There was the new Monkees, but it didn't do it the way you're describing. Right. And that's why it never caught on. Like, you need to do it the way you're describing. I think that's a really good one. I like that. Ibit, do you have one?
Yeah. I'd like to see a reboot of Quantum Leap. And basically Sam just travels around with a smartphone that still is connected to the future internet. And so he doesn't need Al to zip in and out with Gushy and tapping on his little Lego phone. He's just
so
got his
Al,
own.
Al is the voice assistant on his phone.
Al is the Siri of his Quantum Leap smartphone.
That's
that
pretty good,
actually. Bounced around with.
That's pretty good. I like that. I would do Canon. The William Comrade show from the early 70s. I just heard them talking about it on Best Episode Ever. That was a fantastic show where this guy was a private detective and it was Mystery of the Week sort of situation. It was a Quinn Martin production. And I would just put like somebody like Mike Coulter from Luke Cage, who's like a big heavy of the modern day, and then just have Modern Mysteries in that. I'd love to see that treated again.
That'd be awesome.
Thank you, Nikki M. We appreciate that. And thank you, Brian Ibbett, for joining us. Let folks know where they can find more of what you're doing online these days.
It's been my pleasure. Basically, everywhere that you can put in the word Coverville, try that, like Facebook.com Coverville, Twitter.com Coverville. But I'm also on TMS, The Morning Stream with Scott Johnson, which is at frogpants.com/TMS. And you can find me doing podcasts all over the place. Soundography in Coverville if you like music. The Pokemon Go podcast if you happen to like Detective Pikachu and Pokemon. And stuff all around. Just wrapped up the first season of America's Next Top Podcaster. I can't really say the first reality competition podcast show, but we're doing it again. There's going to be a season two, and that's going to be coming up this summer.
Excellent. Folks, our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. We're live on twitch.tv/nightattack, which is also carried on diamondclub.tv, Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We'll see you again next time.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.